Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the one and only MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Today's episode is going to be talking about all things EDH rec, and about trying to reduce the amount of homogenization that we as EDH players seem to experience while trying to build decks using the database. To help me with this discussion today, I'd like to introduce a new friend to the podcast. You've probably seen his articles on EDH Rec itself as the two specific top 10 series. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Doug to the show. Welcome.
Howdy, everybody. I really hope we aren't having to say homogenization too many times. Like, you barely made it through it. I don't know how I did.
That's quite true. So, again, before we get started, where can people find the two specific top 10 series on EDH Rec, as well as the rest of your content and deck thoughts?
Yep, so I come out every Friday with a new top 10 list. It's called Two Specific Top 10. The idea is that we're going to take it down from your typical top 10 lists of just like, oh, these are the best cards in Commander and those kind of things, to something a lot more specific. So we'll get real deep into Scryfall searches and that kind of things, looking for the best one mana spells that are blue and also instant but don't counter, you know, those kind of things, just to break it down as far as we can and see what those best top 10 cards are. And that comes out every Friday. As far as where you can find me, I'm up on Twitter at Doug E Nerd. That's Doug Y, the letter Y, Nerd. And yeah, you can feel free to message me on there and we'll get real nerdy with it, or I'll throw you some Scryfall stuff.
Of course. So again, this is a topic that you wanted to bring up on the show here, and it was definitely interesting for me because I have a very recent example of this, and that is, again, homogenization in EDH. So we, as EDH players, have this kind of constant battle, I would say, about trying to build the most powerful decks versus building flavorful decks. Obviously, this doesn't fit every concept, every single deck that we try to build, but it just seems to be this constant teeter-totter of exactly what we want to do with two, I guess, kind of a night and day difference, is that usually people consider flavorful decks to not be as powerful, and powerful decks not to be flavorful necessarily. And this has definitely been echoed in EDH Rec. Do you want to go a little bit more into what exactly you mean by homogenization of decks utilizing EDH Rec and Scryfall as search tools?
Sure. It's really easy to see it as the hipsters versus the competitive people, or the spikes, I guess, every once in a while. And I really try and avoid that when I can. But what I see working at EDH Rec for a while now, I've been up there for 2 years with my top 10 series. We really get a lot of pushback out on social media saying, you know, EDH Rec is they're making the whole format all samey. It's all the same. It's homogenized.
So the net decking argument here?
A little bit, yeah, but a lot of it's just individual cards as well. And it's really, really hard sometimes because I find myself constantly on the other side of things where I'm saying, yeah, you can look at EDH Rec, but just because a card's on EDH Rec for your commander or otherwise does not mean you have to play that card. And in fact, we even have some tools on EDH Rec that help you not do that. And we've even had people out at Wizards say, hey, yeah, no, I really like EDH Rec because it lets me avoid some of these things when, you know, when I'm looking to build decks, to say, oh, that's something that everybody's doing. I'm not necessarily going to do that. So there is that argument. Like I said, it sounds like it's hipsters versus competitive people, which, again, I try and push back on, because a lot of times I feel like it's not always the best decision to put in the card that you know is the best because it's the most popular, if that makes sense. The example I always use is Eternal Witness. Eternal Witness is great. It's a 3-mana bear that's going to get you a card back from your graveyard. It's one that should see play in a lot of decks. However, there's a lot of other examples of cards that do exactly that, that aren't a creature and are cheaper. There's regrowth for 2 mana that you can just play, and it does the exact same thing as a sorcery that you would have with Eternal Witness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you really have to kind of weigh those and say, okay, do I really need this specific version of this card just because it's, you know, the number 3 creature or whatever on EDH Rec? I know it's high up there. I'm not sure on a specific ranking right now. But you really kind of have to take a look at your deck specifically and say, okay, is this what I want? And one of the ways to do that on EDHREC specifically is the synergy function that we have up there, which I know confuses a lot of people. it just seems to be random numbers under the cards. But essentially what it does is it takes a look at where that specific card is played in a deck versus in general in that color ID for that commander. So, for instance, I have Samet up here in front of me right now. You're going to see... For Samet, there's a lot of cards that are played in general, like, say, Swords to Plowshares. That is played in a lot of Naya decks because it's one of the best white removal spells to ever be printed. But if you take a look at it on EDHREC, it specifically says 6% synergy for Samet decks specifically. And what that means is Swords to Plowshares is played in a lot of Samet decks, but it's not so overwhelming that it's played in all of them, because it doesn't actually have much to do with that commander specifically. Because Samet's really all about giving your creatures haste and tapping and untapping stuff.
Sure. And again, this is definitely shown in the high synergy cards for each commander as well, where you really start seeing those cards that really fit in with your commander. For instance, I'm looking at Najeela the Blade Blossom, which is a deck that I recently built that I will bring up later in our episode. But if you look at the high synergy cards, you're going to be seeing things that are not necessarily super powerful in a lot of decks, but in this one specific build are typically more powerful, more impactful because of one or more reasons. So, for instance, I'm seeing a lot of warriors here. You have things like Champion of Lamholt. You have the combo piece, Druid's Repository. You have Derevi. You have Bramblewood Paragon. Even things like Hull Breacher. Things that you're going to be seeing in a lot of these decks. But when you go to the top cards, you see Swords of Plowshares, Birds of Paradise, Cyclonic Rift, Fierce Guardianship, Swan Song, Skull Clamp.
You see the cards that you see in every deck. Exactly. Yeah.
So there's definitely a difference here when you look at the high synergy cards, which really fit in with the theme, versus what we consider staples. And again, I know that's a problematic term. I bring this up all the time. But versus just generically powerful cards, they're going to be seen in a lot of decks because they're good, and I'm not saying you should be running them. But if you're wanting to look at something a little different, you may ignore the section completely and try to find different options.
Yeah, and I've even suggested before a couple times over at EDHREC with the rest of the writers that, hey, you know, we should try and make our own format, and we'll just make it, you know, the hipster format, hipster rec or what I would have you, where you basically build a deck with a commander and you're not allowed to use any of the cards that are on its EDHREC page, just to make sure that you're really out in the left field with it.
Yeah, I think I actually have a pretty perfect example of that. Again, I'm going to mention Najeela again. I have now created an absolute monster known as five-color colorless Najeela, where all of the lands in here effectively don't tap for any colored mana. They're just colorless, except for a few filter lands. And I believe that maybe just a couple of the creatures in here are on the page. Samet's on here, Alesha's Smiles of Death is on here, but I could very easily take those cards out and the deck would still function fairly well just because of the number of mana rocks I run. So, you know, there are definitely ways around that, but yes, that does sound like a very interesting format and a real challenge that I personally as a brewer would love to take on just because it's so different. It really feeds my brewing interests personally.
And that's something that I constantly tell people, especially if I'm trying to help people power down decks and that kind of thing, because a lot of people come to me with that specifically because they know that I'm prolifically casual, I suppose. A lot of times the exact advice I give is, hey, you have a theme with your deck. Like, you had an idea of what you wanted to do with this deck. Just lean really hard into that theme. And it sounds like you're doing exactly that with the Najeela idea. You kind of said, well, let's do Najeela, but do it colorless because it's five color. And if that is the case, then, you know, I would really try and commit to that if I was trying to make it a little bit less powered and say, okay, let's really lean into the colorless side of this. I still want to be able to activate Najeela's ability every once in a while and come up with that Woobird. But, you know, we can do that and still have a lot of fun with the colorless cards while we're doing it.
Yeah, and again, the biggest challenge that I had with this deck is I was trying to not make it too similar to my very straight-up Karn Silver Golem colorless tribal deck. Mm-hmm. So again, I was using only the cards I had on hand for this initial list, and this deck list will be available in the show notes if you're interested in looking at my first initial run at this. But again, since I didn't want to have two decks doing the exact same thing, I didn't have a lot of overlap. Obviously, if I wanted to really commit to this deck list, I would have put in a lot of different cards, but I also would have really leaned away from running some of the more common mana rocks. I wouldn't have included Arcane Signet. I don't include Sol Ring in that deck, potentially. All of a sudden, sure. I start running all the Manalith effects, so I'm running Mana Geode in this deck. It's one of the cards that I really got into playing, because I started, again, if you've been listening to the podcast long enough, I started playing during War of the Spark, so I just happened to have like 15 copies of Mana Geode sitting around that start getting jammed in all his decks, and this deck does that because it works very well. It gives me a scry, but I would start taking some of the quote-unquote faster pieces out of the deck, start putting in slower pieces, again, the Manalith, the Mana Geodes, Hedron Archive, Firemind Vessel, things like that that give me some value over time, but which don't result in blowouts. I also run a card that I know was only in two decks as of a couple of days ago that is on EDH Rec for Nigila's page, and that is Kaleidostone, which I can use tap 5 and tap it for a 2-mana artifact and sacrifice it to create Wooburg. It's actually how I won the only game this deck has ever played in. But just that kind of thing, that also cantrips as well. So for a 2-cost artifact, you get a card and you can sacrifice to get Wooburg to activate Nigila's ability. Pretty good blowout right there, and it's only in two decks currently out of the, 2,600 Nigila decks currently on the database. So just one of those hidden gems in there, but definitely a way to get away from, the Gigantha Companion where you're trying to get Wooburg every turn. Well, if you're trying to power this deck down and really stick with that theme of colorless, well, Kaleidostone really works with any kind of artifact synergies, and it gets you the exact same thing you need to be able to activate your commander.
I really like that. I've never, ever heard of that card before, which I don't get to say very often with as deep as I go into Scryfall. So that's really cool. And it's the exact kind of thing that I'm talking about when I say, hey, you can use EDH Rec to kind of find things to avoid in addition to things that you might have forgotten when you're going through and building a deck as well. That's something that I ran into not too long ago. I have a mono-white Pegasus Tribal deck that's pretty low-powered. I'm not trying to do anything crazy with it. But I realized when I was reading through a fellow EDH Rec writer's article, shout out to Jalen Rosenquist, who writes our Staple Remover article
series, by the way, that goes a lot more. So if you're interested in hearing a lot more about removing staple cards against things like Demonic Tutor, Cyclonic Rift, Smothering Tithe, definitely check out those articles. They're definitely worth a look because they offer you some interesting alternatives that may have a bit more of a downside, but which, whether they're cheaper or whether they have other additional upsides, definitely worth taking a look at that series.
Yeah, I really like the one that they just did on Signets this last week, actually. But the one that really kind of kicked me and said, oh, hey, you did that thing that everybody does, whether you're the hipster guy or otherwise. I built a mono white deck and I threw Wrath of God in because I threw Wrath of God in. It did have some synergy because my commander for that Pegasus Tribal deck is Sepharis Guy's Blade, who makes all your flying creatures indestructible.
Sure.
So it's like, okay, I'll play Wrath of God because it'll destroy all the creatures, and my Pegasus tokens will survive, and then I'll get to swing for, my life total with Stormherd, which will be great. But what I realized is there's a sub-theme in that deck, because I went a little bit too crazy with one of my favorite old cards, Pegasus Stampede, which for 2 mana makes you a Pegasus token, but you have to sacrifice a land to buy it back.
Okay.
So I really wanted to be able to play that card, so I went all the way down the rabbit hole and ended up making this into a mono-white lands matter deck, which by playing all of the Sun Titan effects, it lets you bring back a CMC3 or less permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, I looked at it and said, oh, hey, I'm playing Wrath of God in here just because I'm playing Wrath of God, when there's two or three different cards that are permanents with CMC3 or less that do the exact same thing that would be perfect for this deck. The main one I'm thinking of here is Planar Collapse. It's an old Urza's Legacy card for 1 and a white. It says, during your upkeep, if there are 4 more creatures in play, sacrifice Planar Collapse and destroy all creatures. Those creatures can't be regenerated this turn. So basically, 4/2 mana stapled onto a permanent that I can recur with Sun Titan or what have you, exactly Wrath of God. So this was one that it was kind of an aha moment for me, just going, hey, I shouldn't be playing this 4-mana sorcery that everybody plays, because not because I'm trying to be a hipster necessarily, but because this other card is actually better in the deck, because I can bring it back turn after turn, keep on replaying my commander as well, or somehow otherwise make my Pegasus tokens indestructible. And anytime there's a problem on the board, I can just get rid of all the problem creatures and then keep on swinging with, you know, 2 dozen tokens until everyone's dead.
Yeah, and that really goes into the whole concept of the theme area of EDH Rec for each additional commander, where you can find these different kinds of themes where it's like, this is really what works with the commander the best. So when I look at Najeela, for instance, you see 1,241 as of the day we're recording, warrior mm-hmm. tribal decks. Obviously, that's generically powerful with Najeela's ability with Wooburg to be able to not only gain warriors, but then be able to allow you to just keep growing your army exponentially. The more you pay Wooburg, be able to get more combat steps and, in theory, win the game. But you start finding some other interesting themes that don't necessarily fit the exact same concept. I see 7 decks that are devoted to snow, some equipment decks, 18 party decks, as well as some Shapeshifter and Elf Tribal as well. So again,
I was looking at the themes there, and Shapeshifter Tribal leaps out at me. It almost makes me want to brew it immediately.
Yeah, it really does, because you have access to all 5 colors of Shapeshifters, and especially since Call Time just came out recently, it seems like it hasn't been that long, but in terms of the number of sets we've had, yes, it has been that long. But yeah, there's just a lot of ways to be able to play around with this ability that are not just jamming every single warrior you can find in your long box of cards into this deck. There's a lot of ways you can kind of take the ability, like I did, where I didn't necessarily try to lean into either one. I was I was very sparing with the number of warriors I threw in there. I threw in a couple of good ones, but again, more just to give myself a few threats in there and then try to be able to use Najeela's ability to win more, I guess, in a Voltron way, I suppose, than anything else. So it was mostly by my choice to say, you know, I could throw in some warriors or I could do a super disruptive theme. And I decided on the colorless one because it just seemed kind of silly, and mostly because a longtime friend of the show, Mono Whiteboarder, kind of dared me to, I suppose. So I can blame him for that one. But
that is a neat idea, though, taking Najeela and making it a little bit Voltron-y. I do see that's not on the theme page on EDH Rec at all. And it's an interesting take on it, because normally you would just go so deep on warriors. It almost makes the build that you can do into kind of a Golos type thing, where you really just go, okay, all I really want to do is put down enough mana rocks that I can just kind of go nuts with this Wooburg ability every turn, and then maybe put some things that make my commander unblockable or hard to, or hexproof or what have you in there as well to just kind of make sure Najeela keeps swinging and gets big.
Yeah, and it kind of fits with how I've been moving my deck building away from trying to build it like EDH Rec did. When I try to build a new deck, I definitely look at EDH Rec to kind of get an idea of where people are building, but then mm-hmm. I immediately try to remove some of those cards from consideration unless I feel that they're absolutely necessary. So again, with this particular build, I was going to continue using Kaleidostone as well as including Cascading Cataracts, which taps for colorless, but also if you pay 5, you can tap it and gain Wooburg. So I was going to give myself a few bits of Wooburg generation potential within the deck, because obviously I didn't want to go completely into colorless because of obviously the Karn bit I mentioned earlier, where most of my best artifact cards that would have worked with this sort of deck were somewhere else, and I didn't want to have to swap them over because I'm lazy like that. But I wanted to give myself a real challenge by saying I can't really go too hard into the artifact sub-themes either. So I am running a Foundry Inspector here to make it a little bit easier to cast my mana rocks. But other than that, I'm not running any tutors. I'm not really running all that many board wipes, much removal. You know, just kind of figuring out what I wanted to do with the deck. Because again, the whole goal was, how do I power this down the best I can to try to challenge myself as a deck builder? And EDH Rec doesn't really work for what I'm doing that, because in a way I'm kind of deconstructing what is a Najeela deck and tearing it down into its component parts and then saying, what if I just didn't do the generically powerful thing as a challenge? And so it's very interesting that we brought this topic up today, just because I'm really excited talking about this silly deck that I built that still happened to win its first game for reason. But yeah, it's just fun to talk about how we utilize EDH Rec as a tool to help build our decks, but we also kind of feel the pull to ignore it too.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. That's, I would say, probably why I started writing my two specific top 10 article series in the first place, is because I felt like a lot of people just looked at EDH Rec and said, oh, okay, this is how you build X Commander. And that's fine as a resource, but you really can't get out on Scryfall or get into the theme drop-down menu on EDH Rec, either one, and find some really, really neat and strange builds out there that people have done. I've even, you know, gotten so deep into Scryfall searches for previous articles I've done that I found, like, an individual deck from EDH Rec. It's like, this is the one person that built, you know, I'm trying to think of the false god, Corona. That built Corona the False God to be, you know, like, based on fear or what have you. And you can find, like, an individual deck that somebody built. And that's really, really neat to do, to go that far down the rabbit hole. But if you are feeling kind of stuck by EDH Rec, you know, you can do the option, like I suggest, where you go through and say, okay, what is everybody doing? Let's see if we can just pivot a little bit to the left here and find a different take on this commander. Or you can even just get them in Scryfall and say, okay, this is what everybody's doing at the top of it, but let's see if I can find a more specific search to get down into what I want my theme to be and really find some cards that are specific to that theme.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up your Sephara deck there, because, again, we're talking about Wrath of God versus permanent-based removal here. This is the reason why I, depending on the deck that I'm looking for, I run Seal of Cleansing in my enchantment stick.
That's actually
Disenchant, for instance.
Yeah, that's one of the other two mana enchantments that I bring back with Sun Titan and all the other CMC-based recursion stuff, like the new Trove Warden and Savin's Reclamation, and Brought Back is one of my favorites as well.
Oh, yeah.
All those. Seal Cleansing is a great pull for that. For those that aren't familiar, it's kind of a disenchant on a stick. It's a 2-mana enchantment that's a sacrifice it, destroy target artifact or enchantment. And then actually there's another one that you can go back to, way, way back to 6th edition, and I think it might have been reprinted a couple times, called Serenity as well. That's kind of like that Planar Collapse card I was talking about that destroys all creatures, except for it destroys, at the beginning of your upkeep, all artifacts and enchantments, including itself. So, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, and obviously we can talk about ways to recur those, as you have, because they are available on a permanent versus trying to get an instant or sorcery, which mono white doesn't really do well getting those back because it's not in the color pie. So right. I digress on that one. But yeah, it's just interesting that we're talking about this, because we seem to have this constant battle about exact, as deck builders, how do we want to try to build this deck? How, and that ever-going argument that is never going to end, honestly, about how do we try to power up or power down decks. Again, that's not how really what we're going to be talking about here today, but we can try to make an effort to do that by finding a silly theme. Obviously, you have a theme with your Sephara deck where you're trying to get as many Pegasus tokens as possible, which could be generically good in its own way,
sure.
But if you again, since you've really gone in on that theme, you feel that it doesn't necessarily break the commander, the symmetry of the game, by the fact that you're taking your time to focus on that theme, and you're just trying to make sure that you're not going all in on just staples. You're trying to find those cards that people have never heard about or you feel are underplayed to try to be able to really fit that theme. Same thing with my Najeela deck here, is that I definitely passed on a lot of very powerful cards, obviously because I was looking at cards I had on hand at the time too, but I passed on a lot of very powerful cards because I said, you know what? What if I just played this card because it's generically good, but it's not one of those generically good cards? I mean, I run Ghostly Flicker in this deck, for instance. I would call that generically good, but you're not going to see it on EDH Rec, for instance.
Yeah, and that's probably true when it comes to Najeela specifically. I would imagine that Ghostly Flicker is nowhere on that page. It's not really often that you see any kind of the blink stuff on there. But going back to your previous point about this divide you often see between, as I kind of term it, the hipsters and the competitive people, there I actually have an example deck as well that I also use and say, hey, I built this to a theme, and it's probably my most powerful deck right now. And for me, that's Will and Rowan Kenrith, the 2 6-mana planeswalker commanders that I've the partner with mechanic. And for those that aren't familiar, Will does a whole lot of Will's kind of the more powerful of the two commanders. And he specifically has a -2 that says, hey, draw 2 cards, and until your next turn, instant sorcery and planeswalker spells that you cast cost 2 less to cast. And my theme for this is I went in really, really deep on that cost reduction and said, hey, I'm not going to play any instants, sorceries, or planeswalkers that don't have something I can cost reduce by at least one. So if there's, for instance, all of the different cantrips and those kind of things that you normally see in a storm type deck. I don't play any of those 1-mana cantrips. I went up and said, hey, I'm going to play the 2 and the 3-mana cantrips that have 2 generic mana so that when I activate Will, I can get a little bit more bang for my buck. And it makes it a little slower to start the game, certainly. But once you get Will out for the first time and really start just spinning wheels and drawing cards and you know, getting people with gutter snipe. Triggers and those kind of things, you really do feel that restriction I put on the deck that says, hey, we're only going to play the slightly more expensive cards. You're getting extra bang for the buck because of that, because you're just getting more of an effect than you would if you know, kept on drawing. Oh, okay, it's just another 1-mana cantrip off the top, or it's a lightning bolt or what have you.
Sure. And you're not going to be playing Counterspell in that particular instance because you can't get the mana reduction, whereas all of a sudden something like Negate becomes far, far preferential because you can at
Actually,
least reduce it.
I went a little bit deeper on that, and Supreme Will is actually my favorite counter in that deck. I play a couple of the cards like that, that are, you know, 3 or 4 mana that you can not only play as counter spells, but also just storm off with in general because they have an alternate option that's usable during your own turn if there's nothing on the stack, if that makes sense.
So some of the exile card from hand, reduce mana cost type things as well would fit in there.
For sure.
Yeah. So just if some since you have been looking at this for a long time, what would you recommend to someone who has built the EDH rec or at least has utilized EDH rec kind of as a guideline? Or sorry, as a set of rules. Obviously, we're kind of going with the Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, guidelines, rules, sorts of things here. So,
I mean,
forget.
there's people that do both. I've definitely seen both. I've seen people that are using it as a guideline, and it's not just EDH rec either. There's especially as you get into the higher power, there's a lot of people that like to just pull lists from online, and I don't want to bag on that. I understand not everybody's a brewer, and some people just want to pull a deck list and go, but it can create power problems if you pull the wrong list. And I feel like that's something that we see quite a bit when you have people that come straight over from constructed formats. And I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on this because it was a whole thing a couple of weeks ago when Sheldon Mainery came out with his article.
Oh
But
yes, that was a interesting time to be on Magic the Gathering Twitter, we'll just say.
a kerfuffle, yes. Yeah, so there is a lot of people that will come from constructed environments where net decking is kind of the rule, or at least the guideline. And they'll come over to Commander, and their first instinct is to pull a deck that they found online. And maybe it's powerful, maybe it's not. But either way, that's not a wrong impulse at all. There's nothing wrong with that. It's something that Rule Zero should cover. Rather than us getting up into our feelings about it, is just having that discussion with them and saying, hey, you pulled this list, you know, where'd you get it from? Do you have a kind of idea of how it's going to play? What cards are in it? That kind of thing. Do you mind if I take a look at it? And that's going to help you out a lot when you're going through, as the Rule Zero discussions always do.
Yeah, so what I did want to ask you, though, since you have been working for EDH Rec for a couple of years now, is how would you recommend someone who has usually utilized EDH Rec as a more as a rule than a guideline? How would you recommend they start trying to maybe wean themselves off EDH Rec a little bit, start trying to branch out, try some new weird themes? We're not new to weird themes, But I definitely know that this time last year, I was still pretty much sticking to what I saw in EDH rec. Over time, I developed a unique style where I wanted to try to get off EDH rec, and that's what I've basically done with most of my decks. So sure. Now all of them pretty much have a different theme, for the most part, that isn't necessarily supported in that commander's tribal build. So how would you, I guess, try to walk someone through trying something outside the box that isn't necessarily supported on EDH rec?
I mean, building to a theme is certainly part of it. That's always kind of one of my main suggestions. Outside of that, I would just say, hey, if you like this card, and I'm staring at Counterspell at the top of one of the EDH rec pages right now. If you like Counterspell, and who doesn't? It's simple, it's efficient. It's one of the best spells that's ever been printed.
Boo!
If you like that card, no one's saying you don't have to play it. But if you want to take a look at what other cards are out there, I would actually shove them towards Scryfall and say, hey, just type, you know, counter, the Oracle text for counter and the Oracle text for spell in out there and take a look at what comes up. You can sort by EDH rec, so you're not looking at just total garbage commons that you're never going to play, you know, and still see some of the stuff that's just, you know, on page two, basically, or just a little bit further down the list. And you can come up with some counter spells that are exactly what your deck wants. And what I was talking about with Supreme Will is exactly what I'm talking about. I wanted something that couldn't just counter, but it had a second option as well. And there's lots of spells like that out there, which is why I don't play Counterspell specifically in that Will and Rowan build, is because it's actually not as good as other options that I found further down the page. And I would really stress that angle on it, especially if it is somebody that's trying to keep their decks at a high level, to say, hey, you know, you're not doing this just to be a hipster. You can really, really take a look a little bit further down into the options here and find something that will actually work better for your deck because it fits the theme of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I use Scryfall pretty much for every deck that I build because I am trying to find cards that are a little bit off the beaten path or, you know, ways exactly. to draw cards that are not Rhystic Study, for instance. I have a copy of Rhystic Study. It's in exactly one deck. I usually try to find a way to not use it because I know it brings a lot of feel bads or just gets blown up immediately. So
yeah.
There are just a lot of other cards that I can find, even if they aren't enchantments. I am a fan of a couple different blue spells that have flashback on them. So I can never remember the names, apparently, but...
We can do a Scryfall search.
We could do a Scryfall search. But yeah, I just trying to find different ways to be able to make up for that value that may work better in that deck. Obviously, Rhystic Study is not going to work in a Storm deck very well because you want to be able to have instants and sorcery. So, yes. For instance, that one would not work well, whereas even Divination, all of a sudden in your Will and Rowan deck there, is going to cost you one blue to draw two cards.
Absolutely. And that's something that is really why I get on rants on this subject a lot, is because you see that all the time. And it just makes me almost want to shake sense into people. Which, you know, when you see Rhystic Study come down in a Storm deck or somewhere or a powerful card that just does not fit at all in the strategy that they're trying to pursue. And you just say, hey, you know, like there's a whole bunch of different options here. Have you taken a look at this card or this card or this card and seen if they actually might be better than this staple that you see in every single deck that you're just playing because it's a staple, because somebody said the words auto include. And I don't think that that's true. And a lot of people will call me a hipster for that. And that's fine. I embrace that title because it's honestly true. But you can play good cards that are better in your deck, and your deck arguably is more interesting if you do that, along with being more powerful.
Sure, and it's why I'm playing Kaleidostone in my Najeela deck, because it has everything I want out of a card stapled right to it. And there are ways to be able to get that right back out of my graveyard, in theory, if I wanted to build it that way. So, yeah.
I'm just so happy that I now know that there's a 5-mana egg out there.
Well, it actually only costs 2 mana to cast.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a lot like the 2-mana egg cycle that has a whole deck named after it and that kind of thing. That it's like, hey, add red, black, and draw a card to your to it, and it's almost the exact same thing, other than you pay five to sacrifice it to get Wooburg.
Yep. And it's kind of an interesting mini game too, because you want to keep up the five generic mana. It doesn't matter how many sources you have, just you don't have to worry about the color. Obviously, you're just playing generic mana for the most part. So the only real challenge in that deck is getting the Geel out and your few other pieces. But other than that, yeah, it's all. I always try to find some silly cards that are in my famous long box of chaff that I try to throw in the decks. Obviously, I'm gonna go more into my deck building theory in a future episode. But again,
To break in really quick, that's another one that I always suggest if people are trying to power down decks is build from your collection. And if you have an extensive collection, maybe just build from a single box of it. I feel like a lot of people would really, really enjoy that if they try it for the first time. And it's something that will keep you away from homogenization a lot of the time, and will also make your deck it'll be a little bit more fluid, and it won't cost you any money, which is also great.
That's exactly what I did with the Najeela deck. I just looked at the cards I had on hand that were, for the most part, not in any other decks. Obviously, there were a couple that I had to borrow from other decks just to throw in there, but almost everything was not being used. So, I mean, effectively, the cost was just a copy of Cascading Cataracts, which is just a couple bucks, because I didn't happen to have that on hand before I built this deck. But other than that, everything, even including the Kaleidostone, were already in my collection. And it allowed me to make a far more personal deck versus just realizing, hey, I got to spend, I don't know, $200, $300 to build this Najeela deck, like it pretty much is on EDH Rec. What if I just try to randomly use a whole bunch of cards I have in my collection, see what happens?
But, and the other nice thing about building on your collection is it doesn't necessarily, depending on your collection, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're playing, bad cards by any means. I use my Pegasus deck as an example. It's kind of a janky mono white build that it certainly doesn't get off the ground quick, but once it gets going, it's quite good. And one of the reasons it can do that is it can use stuff like the new Archaeomancer's map. Or just the old land tax, those kind of things. Cards that I had laying around, including stuff off the reserve list in the land base, like Lotus Veil and Scorch Ruins, which are now, $100 reserve list cards, although I got them when, back when they were $10. It's fun to find excuses to play those kind of things as well, that you normally wouldn't have. And building out of your collection can do that as well. You can take a look through all your old stuff that you're just keeping around because it's on the reserve list, and you're like, man, I'm not sure I'm ever going to use any of this stuff, and go, oh, hey, that's perfect. And that works for 25 cent cards like Remote Farm in my case, all the way up to Lotus Veil and Scorch Ruins, which are now getting to be $100 cards.
And I do definitely take pride in finding random cards that I have in my collection, mostly because I didn't necessarily collect all of these cards. I have inherited one or two collections along the way. So there was a lot of stuff in there that came from over the years, like Kaleidostone. Well, that's not something I would have collected by myself, but it just happened to be in one of the boxes that I own. And it just normally, I've been looking at that card for a long time, just this is not going to work. And then I just one day thought, well, I wonder if I could try to unbreak Najeela. And all of a sudden, that card became the basically an auto include in what I was going to end up building, because I just knew it was going to be generically powerful for that one specific concept, and then fill in with mana rocks, do other interesting, silly things, and rinse, repeat, finish the deck.
And it's nice to be able to plop Najeela down and say, no, it's not that Najeela deck, and actually like follow through on that as well.
Yeah,
So.
I asked my opponents if they could figure out what the theme was to the deck. It took a few turns, but people finally caught on to the fact that I was only playing colorless lands after I dropped one third of Tron, effectively.
That's a fun hook. I like that.
Yeah, I think I dropped Urza's Mine first, and that's what set the signal off that I was just going mono colorless
Right.
with that one. Yeah, it's just very interesting that we're talking about EDH Rec here, because just with our own history of utilizing the tool, is I know personally that I used to just look at EDH Rec like, this is what I should be building. I didn't try to build obviously with the top cards each. I tried to pick and choose what I wanted, because I didn't want the run-of-the-mill average deck as you can find on there. But if you were looking for what we would consider most likely should includes instead of auto includes, that's really where I was looking for. And it's interesting how over time we have developed this sense of wanting to really take EDH, I guess, to its maximum level and starting to try to challenge the assumptions of the average deck and try to create something brand new. I think that's really a testament to what the power of this format and how we can be individual deck builders while still building solid competitive decks.
Yeah, I mean, I think the old adage of EDH is there's room for everyone. And as frustrating as it can be to see some of the new cards come out and kind of feel like it everything's just power creep all the time, that's not really true. You can build your own decks to any power level. If you feel like your community or your play group is at a power level you don't want to be, you can fix that through discussion, or you can go out and do crazy stuff like, hey, I built, you know, 5 Elder Dinosaur precons that are all balanced against each other. Do you guys want to try them out? Or, hey, do you want to borrow one of my decks? You know, that's in there. And if you do that, you should try and do the opposite as well. Or if somebody wants to play at higher power, you should try that out if you want to, even if it means borrowing one of their decks. There really is room for everyone, everywhere in EDH, and everywhere on EDH Rec as well. And one of the things I like to say when people talk about the homogenization, quote-unquote, problem with EDH Rec is not only avoiding it entirely, but just the fact that there's a lot of cards on every page for every commander out there. I mean, there's more than, if I'm not mistaken, there's more than 100 cards on the page for any given commander.
Mm-hmm.
So you can keep on scrolling. If you keep on seeing stuff that you say, oh, I've seen that card, or maybe that's not the best option, that kind of thing, you can pay attention to that synergy score. I really, really like that as an option because it says, hey, these are the cards that belong in this deck specifically, as opposed to just playing Cultivate or Eternal Witness and decks that don't necessarily need it. You can keep on going past those and say, okay, well, here's the high synergy stuff for this. Is that what I want for my specific theme that I'm building for this commander? And if it is, great. If it's not, then keep on scrolling. There's a lot of page to scroll through. I guarantee you, if you go far enough down, you're going to be finding stuff that is what you want to do, but it will still feel your own.
Oh, yeah. And that's what's so great about the advanced filters option as well.
Yes, very much so. There's if you haven't taken a look at all the drop down menus and those kind of things on the typical EDH Rec page, I would implore you to do that. There's a lot of tools out there that you can use to get down to what you're trying to do, and that's really what we want you guys to have as a tool at EDH Rec. It should be a tool for deck building, not a checklist, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I hope that throughout the course of this episode, we've basically proven that you don't have to look at EDH Rec as more than a tool. It's just a piece that you can use along the way while building your decks. But I think ultimately building the deck is up to you. You can choose to use EDH Rec doing 100% the average deck, or you can do basically what I did and almost completely ignore it. So
yeah.
It's just great that we have such tools available to us that we can find all these random cards that we've never heard about, and that we've also have the ability to see what works with a particular commander, but then also make our own choices about what we should include and what we should cut.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today, Doug. It's been great having you on here talking about EDH Rec and some of our personal kind of strange, kind of interesting theme builds.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It was a blast.
All right. And where can people find your content again?
Once again, 2 specific top 10. It's a top 10 list. Feel free to just scroll through and look at the pictures. I know I do that for college football and those kind of things and my other hobbies. When I see top 10 lists, I don't get offended. But it's up every Friday up on EDH Rec at the top of the page. And if you want to talk to me specifically or just see me post random stuff out on Twitter, that's at Dougie Nerd, Doug the letter Y Nerd.
Sounds good. And you can find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. You can also find the entire back catalog of this podcast on the usual podcast outlets, Google, Spotify, Apple, Player FM, MTGcast, and many other podcasting outlets. Again, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.